Churches and faith communities have long been places for people to gather, share, and even mobilize in support of common causes. In the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, churches played a large part in fueling and organizing for change. This is not so different in the modern era, with local faith organizations pushing for institutional change to the way that Black Portlanders are treated by the police. I spoke with the rector of St. Philip the Deacon Episcopal Church, the Reverend Dr. Maria McDowell, about the history of racism in the Episcopal Church and the role that modern faith communities can play in the current movement for racial justice. St. Philip the Deacon is a historically African-American church located in Portland that is part of the larger Episcopal Church, which is a mainline Protestant Christian denomination rooted in the Anglican Church. The Episcopal Church separated from Anglicanism once the United States gained its independence. Let's get into my conversation with Reverend Maria McDowell. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. Can you start out by telling us a little bit about the history of your church?
Sure. St. Philip the Deacon was started actually in 1911 as a specifically African-American parish within the Episcopal Diocese of Oregon. A lot of the members had come to Oregon by working on the train and were a part of other congregations. And actually, I think as they became a larger group of African-Americans in Portland, experienced a lot of tension around racism within congregations and their ability to participate in leadership. And so they were given permission to start a mission. It was actually called the Colored Mission by the diocese. And so in 1911, they started their own parish in Northeast Portland. And then they bought property and built a building at its current location at the corner of Knott and Rodney. And they've been there since then. And it's a parish that has had a lot of members who've been really active, professionally active, had lawyers, dentists, doctors that have been a part of it throughout its history, pretty active in civil rights work. Members helped start the NAACP and the Urban League here in Portland. Unthank Plaza, that Dr. Unthank was a member of the congregation. So it's been a congregation of pretty active African-Americans, active in social work and in politics around Portland since its beginning.
Yeah, I'm curious, can you speak to a little bit the history or the relationship between churches and movements for civil rights?
Between Episcopal churches?
Sure, yeah.
Sure. So I think it's a fraught history, to be honest. The Episcopal Church really, until the civil rights movement, I would say, tried to, it presented itself as above the fray, as outside of politics, which I think now we would say there is no way to be outside of politics, that you actually are siding with existing political structures if you think that you're not really doing anything or that you're simply allowing the status quo to continue if the status quo is acceptable. And so I think that up until the civil rights movement, the Episcopal Church as a denomination really saw itself as a part of existing legal and social structures in the United States. That really began to change with the civil rights movement in the South and the active participation of younger Episcopal clergy, white and black, in that movement. And that changed how the Episcopal Church understands itself in relation to social and political structures. And, you know, I don't think that in 1930 or 40, we would call the Episcopal Church a particularly progressive or liberal church on a political spectrum. Now, that is certainly the case. And I think that places like St. Philip provided kind of a haven for African-Americans whose cultural and religious background actually was Episcopal, because a lot of them came from the islands where the Anglican Church is a fixture, but were also committed to social justice within their neighborhoods. And so I think the parishioners at St. Philip were really active in civil rights. I think that relationship with other parishes has really depended on, frankly, the politics and the leadership of that particular parish. I think that right now there's a growing shift within the Episcopal Church at large, and certainly within within Oregon, to recognize that sort of a passive "we're against racism" isn't sufficient; that we need to be actively anti-racist. And I think that some of the folks at St. Philip's have been a part of that conversation and encouraging that. It's also an aging congregation, and so I think that there's right now that's a struggle. It remembers a lot of its history and participation in the civil rights and inviting other parishes and folks into that. But right now, you know, a lot of folks are 75, 80 years old and really can't be out protesting, but are supportive of that. So I think it's a, you know, I think there's kind of a fraught relationship between parishes and political stances, and how much as Episcopalians we want to challenge the status quo that's around us. And it really varies from parish to parish. And yeah, I'll leave it there. It varies.
And so in thinking about the current movement for racial justice, what role could the modern Episcopal Church, or even churches more broadly, play in that movement?
I think that depends on which churches you're talking about, to be honest. I think that the Episcopal Church has a lot to apologize for. We are a church whose infrastructure and wealth comes out of the racist slave trade, North and South. That's actually something that the Episcopal Church has wrestled with a lot recently. There's a curriculum now called Sacred Ground, which came out of, I can't remember the name of the woman, but she made the movie Traces of the Trade, in which she recognized that her family's wealth and participation in one of the oldest churches in Providence, Rhode Island, was entirely based on the slave trade. And out of that came an investigation of kind of the history of complicity with racist practices throughout the country. And so recently the Episcopal Church has committed itself to educating its primarily white members around what it means to be an anti-racist. I think that, so in a part, I think the Episcopal Church has a lot to apologize for, and it needs to recognize the ways in which its wealth and its status came at the cost of the way it's violated the rights and promises made to all people of color. I also think that it remains a fairly wealthy and powerful institution in the country. And as much as I don't like the reality of it, I do think that white people need to be on board to actually dismantle racism. And I am a white priest in a black congregation, so I think that probably affects my viewpoint. But I think that having members who are part of local governments. I mean, there are Episcopalians in local Portland government. There are Episcopalians in the legislature. There are Episcopalians at all levels of sort of social and political power. Those, we need to use that power for anti-racist work. And sometimes that may mean we need to step down from those positions, and we need to advocate that people of color hold them. But I think that, you know, whether we like it or not, all religious institutions in the United States still have a lot of influence and power. And we see that on the Christian right. I mean, we see that they have lots of influence and power and are pretty shameless about wielding that. I think that progressive organizations and institutions need to do that. I think a great example of that is actually the Poor People's Campaign that is currently being led by Reverend William Barber, and he's reinvigorating something that Martin Luther King was a part of as a faith-based active response to challenge the ways in which poverty is sort of deemed acceptable in our nation. So I think it's an important thing, but I think it really depends on what denomination and what group you're talking about. You know, I don't think that people at St. Philip have to apologize, but I do think that there are probably other Episcopal churches in our state that need to think more clearly about how they've benefited from, you know, the racist policies of being a white supremacist founded state.
Right. And so I'm curious about talking about different Episcopal churches and parishes. Apologizing is one thing that you noted as one action that they could take towards anti-racism. Are there other ones that come to mind for you?
Yeah. And you're right. That's fair. I don't think an apology is sufficient at all. In the statement that St. Philip released, part of why it was written the way that it was is to acknowledge that communities of color and faith communities of color have actually been asking for very specific practical changes for a long time. And that we need to actually act. And I think a significant part of that action, especially for Episcopal churches, is to get behind the leadership and the work that has already been done by communities of color. We don't actually need to tell communities of color what they need. They know that. And they probably have a better sense of that than most of us who are white Episcopalians. And so getting behind that is really important. A part of that means listening better to our Latinx congregations. We actually have a number of them in the state. They too experience, for instance, police violence, fear of police checking on them due to immigration concerns. And instead of poo-pooing that or dismissing that or, you know, we need to act to change policies. I think that's one way that we can do that. And then we primarily need to act to change those policies that are being advocated for by organizations of color. And so that's, you know, as an example, that's why we wrote the St. Philip statement that we did, is it's not enough to say, hey, we think racism is bad, but we need to actually call our commissioners and call our leadership and say, here are the things that we'd like to change. And we support the work that's already being done by communities around us.
Right. And that faith communities have for a long time been a place for mobilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing is, you know, the civil rights movement really was a faith-based movement in a lot of ways. Not all, I mean, whether it was Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, faith was a part of that. The religious structure of that faith might have been different, but frankly, religion motivates a lot of people still. And I think especially Judaism, Islam, and Christianity have such a sway in the U.S., and they are at core religions of compassion and solidarity with those who are being oppressed. And we need to actually take advantage of that as a part of our faith commitments and actually act on that in a way that pursues actual real change in the world around us.
Well, Maria, I want to thank you for speaking with us. Do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners before we wrap up?
I guess I would say that, especially since I think most listeners in Portland are not necessarily people who are committed to a particular faith community, I think that it's really important to both recognize the importance that faith can have in making change, but also call your faith communities to account. You know, it's not okay for us to just worry about what our Sunday morning worship looks like in the middle of a pandemic. It's really important that we are called to actually act on the values of our faith traditions and sometimes we need to be reminded of that because we're afraid or we forget or it's uncomfortable. And I think that's really important, that I think that faith matters, even if it's not shared. And I think that we need to be reminded to act on that faith for in solidarity with anybody who is oppressed, whether they're a person of color or they're queer or they're poor, you know, whatever that is. Faith communities need to be reminded that that is the core part of our mission as people in the world.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with KBOO.
I appreciate having the time. So thank you very much, Althea.
That was Reverend Dr. Maria McDowell, the rector of St. Philip the Deacon Episcopal Church, a historically African-American church located in Portland. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.